it's a ship in the open water that's run out of fuel and there's no one to help it. You know, it's a sitting duck waiting to be preyed upon.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. Weekly, we share interviews with real estate professionals, passing on their experience and knowledge to our listeners. Thanks for joining us. My name's J. Darren Gross. We are so glad you're here. Today's guest is international real estate investor Adam Cohen. Adam is the president of West One International. He invests in primary markets from Miami to Los Angeles and has a wealth of experience that he will share with us here in a bit. Before we get started, just a couple of quick things. If you like what we're doing, be sure to subscribe to our show. You can do that on iTunes. It's super easy. Just go to iTunes, type in Commercial Real Estate Pro Network in the search bar, and when you see our logo, it's the headphones, click subscribe. This will ensure you receive all of our episodes, and you can listen anytime you choose, whether it's in the car, at the gym, or even at your kid's sports practice. When you do subscribe, be sure to leave a comment. Let us know what you think. And if you have any comments that future shows you'd like for us to pursue, please let us know. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a real estate investor and a commercial property insurance broker. I've been an insurance broker for 25 plus years. My primary clients are real estate professionals dealing in multifamily, retail, warehouse, office, and development. Also, I'm a real estate investor and have been for almost 20 years. And based on these two things, I'm always looking for more information about real estate so I can better support my clients and for information I can use in my own investing. And that's how Commercial Real Estate Pro Network and CREPN Radio came about. Insurance is a big part of any real estate transaction. When you or your clients make an offer and you need insurance, give me a call. I'll do all I can help. It's what I do. The easiest way to reach me is if you go to jdarrengross.com or go to commercialrealestatepronetwork.com and hit the contact bar there and send me a message. I'll do all I can to help you. Lastly, before we get on with the show, if you're on LinkedIn, we've got a group there, Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. I encourage you to go on there and join the group. It's a great group of professionals in commercial real estate and a great place to network. All right, let's get on with our show. Today, our guest is Adam Cohen. Adam Cohen is an experienced investor from London and the president of West One International. Adam's experience and instinct enable him to act quickly. He sees a deal for what it is. He knows what needs to be done and how to make it happen. Today, he shares with us his first real estate investment experience and his views on investing.
All right, on the line right now, I've got Adam Cohen. Adam is the CEO of West One International. He's a real estate investor and much more. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you for having me.
Adam, for our listeners, if you could do me a favor and give us a little bit more of your background, tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay, well, I'm originally from London, England. I've been in the real estate investment business for over 20 years. I started my career in the UK and then moved out to the US to conquer America. I've spent time in New York, in Miami, in Las Vegas, and you know, right now I'm back and forth between Los Angeles and Miami. And we're growing the company to be one of the largest nationwide companies in America.
I love it. And the when you got started, you said you've been doing it for 20 years?
23 years, approximately.
All right. And what was your attraction to real estate?
Well, I'd been doing some other things. I'd had a communication company business that I'd sold. I'd had a manufacturing of surveillance equipment. I'd been a private investigator. I had friends and family that were in the business, and I think I just had a magnetic connection to it. one day I went to a real estate auction. There were people buying and selling. And, you know, I used to drive around properties with my dad when I was younger and watch him, you know, in the business. And I think it was just a connection that I felt to the industry. And, you know, although I tried to, you know, do other things, I ended up just one day being in an auction and putting my hand up.
Really? Was it a random event, or had you had some sort of sense you were going to bid on a deal?
It was pretty random. The first property I ever bought at auction was a little house, funny enough, in an area called Basingstoke, Hampshire. It was funny because I was flipping through the auction catalog and, you know, I wasn't really looking to buy. I was more looking to kind of network and chat with people and what have you. And a property comes up and I recognize the road and I know the road, and it's a little kind of like terrace house. I guess, you know, I guess in America you have like townhouses, and it's called an end of terrace townhouse. And I knew the road, and my cousin actually had a house in that road. So I'm calling my cousin from the auction, saying to him, do you know the house? You know, if my cousin just bought a house there, what did he pay? What does he think it's worth? And I'm like, okay, fine, I'll roll the dice. So I rolled the dice on the house, and I ended up buying it for about £50,000. And people kind of like looked at me like, because I was pretty aggressive in my bidding to walk away with it. And so I get the house for $50,000. And, I sold that house for about $80,000 about a year later.
Sweet. Yeah, and was the plan all along to flip the house? I mean, it sounded like...
Actually, I rented it out for a while. You know, yeah. I wasn't in a rush, and I collected the rent. And then when the tenant moved out, I put in a new kitchen, new bathroom, new flooring, you know, did the windows and put it on the market. So you figured, you know, I'll either sell the house or rent it out for another year. And someone came along, made me a good offer, and off it went.
I like it. I similar first experience myself. Had a house, a client who was investing. He needed some money, and ended up anyway in the driveway. Bought the house from him, and later had a customer that was looking to get in, and literally 7 months later was out of it, kind of thing. And was that was kind of my hook on the business there too. But so your first one, you. On the was there any financing involved, or was it a matter of did you have the cash, or how did you go about?
Funny enough, I paid cash for that. The first one, the future deals. I actually that was when I started learning about mortgage financing, realizing back then it was a little bit more complicated than it is now. But that one I paid cash for. But later properties, I said to myself, you know, how do I finance these? How do I, you know, maximize my cash to essentially put down deposits and leverage? And I started looking into alternative financing solutions, whereas I could buy properties with minimal prepayment penalties or long-term plans, depending on the situation. And very quickly, I started chatting with investors about coming into me and buying and selling and flipping properties. And at that point, I started buying properties, not so much in London. London was a pretty expensive market. I used to like coastal towns that go down to Dover, Folkestone, Margate. I remember I used to walk down, for example, the high streets of some of these towns, and I'd go into every real estate office and give them my business card, and I'd say, listen, cash buyer, bring me a deal, I'll close it in 5 days. And I had every realtor in those towns calling me. And, you know, I would basically offer 50% of the asking price on any property that came in to my view. And essentially, I bought quite a few properties.
Well, in asking or in offering 50% of asking, what kind of percentage of close ratio were you getting based on the number of deals you were making offers on?
The surprising thing was it was pretty high. It was during the recession. It was towards the end of the recession that happened in the UK during the mid-90s. And, you know, people needed money. They were upside down in their mortgages, same as we saw here in 2008. And, you know, they were relocating and they just needed the money. And because this was a smaller market, a lot of these people didn't have big mortgages. So it wasn't so difficult for me to negotiate a competitive deal.
And on the, after that first deal, any lessons that you learned? I mean, it sounds like the financing was one of your big lessons that you learned.
Yeah, I learned to be very careful with that. You know, financing is a sensitive area that most people think they understand, only to find out they don't. And you know, there are advantages of paying more expensive fees for cheap for no prepayment penalty that people don't pay attention to, and there are advantages to getting cheaper rates and really understanding what you're getting into and understanding the interest rates and the prepayment penalties and things like that. You definitely need to kind of pay attention to those details.
Got it. And now you are, you mentioned L.A., Las Vegas, Miami. Where all are you investing?
Are those the... my preferred place to invest is Miami. I've done very, very well in the Miami markets. I've also invested quite well over the years in New York. And, you know, those are, I guess, my two preferred places to invest.
And are you still investing in single family, or what are you investing in?
Yes, I do. I actually put an offer in on a house yesterday. We actually had a client that brought in a short sale. He kind of didn't have the means to do the deal, and I said, well, this is a nice little property. Why don't I take it over myself? So I actually just put in the offer to the bank yesterday.
All right. And now that you're in these primary markets, do you play in any secondary markets or any tertiary markets?
I've been in the secondary markets in terms of, I guess, the outskirts of the cities over the years. I've found that we've made money there and lost money, and now I kind of stick to the major cities.
Got it. And do you feel like you're better protected in those larger primary markets, or do you feel like you're more exposed?
I feel you pay a premium for it. On the other hand, you get a better quality tenant. The property is not likely to be destroyed when you rent it out, which is something you get in the secondary markets. And I also feel that when I look to sell the property, that I can generally get a fast turnaround and I can get the price that I'm looking for, as opposed to in the secondary markets, there's a lot more negotiation going on.
Are you still active over in the UK?
Funnily enough, I actually haven't been too active in the UK for quite a few years. I am looking to open an office in London this year.
Got it. And currently, can you describe your current assets? Or actually, it's back. Are you doing buy and hold now more? Are you doing flips? Are you doing what are you doing as far as what's your investment strategy on the?
I would say I selectively buy and hold, because I believe, and I always have believed, that you need to accumulate assets and wealth and you shouldn't sell everything. But I'm very active in the buying and selling markets. I do like to flip deals out. You know, I don't like to be to have more on than I can manage. And I do believe in that you've got to keep the wheels turning to feed the needs of the next deal. So you have to continuously have to kind of select us to buy and sell or buy and hold. And I do both quite actively.
And can you describe your current inventory of units? Do you measure them in doors, or do you measure them in square footage, or do you measure them in values, or how do you look at them?
Do you know, it's funny, because when you own it and you're not looking to sell it or you're not looking to finance it, I don't think you kind of, I mean, I'm a private, I'm independent, I'm not a big management company. I don't really kind of take that approach to it. I value it, I think, based on per building or per property. And I would say we have about 10, I guess, multi-tenant income-producing buildings, and I have a decent number of single-family houses and condos that I've bought over the years.
Got it. What's more difficult for you right now, finding the property or finding the money?
Funnily enough, I would say finding the property. You know, because I work in the finance business, I always have investors that want to put money into a deal, need to put money into a deal. So the capital is always on the table for us. Finding the right deal is always the toughest thing. There's always something that somebody doesn't like about a property, or there's a problem, and then you have to have a very creative plan as to how you get solutions to those problems, to think of future value, added value, or long-term hold, and how it's going to make sense.
Well, in that, you mentioned when you were first starting out about the number of deals you were offering and that you were closing a high percentage. How do you look at it now? Are you still writing volume offers, and are you closing, you know, high volume, or is it more of a kind of a selective, like you said? I mean, are you trying to narrow down and say that's the one I want, and this is the price I'm willing to pay, or how do you go about that?
I look for particular types of properties that capture my interest. Example, I like multi-tenant. I like luxury market. I like something that has a story to it. I prefer, and I always have, something that's in distress, something that has been on the market for a while. The problems are significant, and most people have given up on it. That's kind of, it's a ship in the open water that's run out of fuel, and there's no one to help it. You know, it's a sitting duck waiting to be preyed upon. So I look then as to how I can mitigate the current situation of the debt, how I can restructure it, you know, why has it gone so wrong? And, you know, commonly, you know, the people that own these properties, they've lost their money. They've got nowhere to go. They're looking just to save face and not to be homeless or bankrupt the next day. So I kind of look to do a deal whereas I can take advantage of the situation but help the person involved in the situation so he can walk away smiling and feel that he didn't just lose the property, but he actually got some value in the deal himself as well.
Is there a particular length of time that you look for or that you recognize the deal is more of an opportunity? I mean, is it if it's been on the market a year, if it's been on longer than a year?
I'd say 6 months to a year. I mean, at some point, you have to realize that, you know, when I saw a property recently on Fisher Island in Miami, it was a great price. It was a great location. We ended up not doing the deal. I actually walked away from it. But the amount of problems involved in the deal, it was just, there was this lien, great property, great upside potential, but at some point you have to know when to walk away, and you have to kind of base it from experience and based on the transaction.
And with being in multiple markets, do you outsource the management, or do you have people on the ground in the different markets?
In some markets, we self-manage, and in other markets, we outsource it.
Okay. What do you see future? What are you looking for as you go forward here?
Growing West One International to be a nationwide lender. We already do business nationwide, but I plan on having offices around the country. And at the same time as being a nationwide lender, we're looking to kind of create a purchasing platform where people can bring us opportunities and we can essentially provide working capital and JV with potential real estate investors to have a piece of more deals and to help other people get involved in the industry.
Financing. We've talked a little bit about it. You said you have investors coming to you all the time. Is that always been the case since you had early success, or was there a time when you were more in a fundraising mode?
Do you know, it's seasonal. When you're doing well, people see you making money. Times are good, money's being thrown at you, you don't know what to do with it, you can't find the deals fast enough. You go through a few bumps. I've been through it myself, where you have a few bad deals, you lose some money, there's a recession, people don't have money. You have to kind of regain and re-earn that trust. It takes time, and it's a lot of hard work. So I would say I've had my bumps in the road, and I don't think that anyone that's been in this business could say the same, regardless of how large or how small they are. But at the same time, if you know what you're doing, you get your foot back in that door and you get back on the saddle and you make it work again.
When you are in that position, are you working more in syndication or actual borrowing? I mean, are you finding people that are wanting to loan you money, or people that want to be have an equity position in the deal, or both?
It's both. You know, some people like to be into the debt side of it. They consider it to be less risky with a straight return. And others like to kind of see upside and they want to share in the profits. So it's a kind of a combination. You get both on the table.
In construction, there's a saying a lot of times, it goes good, fast, and cheap, pick two.
That's it. I would say good and fast. Cheap doesn't always succeed.
Yeah. Do you see that? Is there a similar balancing act that you see in what you're doing with real estate investing?
Yeah, I don't look for the cheap deals. I look for the good deals. And sometimes you have to overpay. Sometimes you have to be willing to, you know, take less of a profit, knowing that you can make a profit. And it's reasonable. Cheap is great if you can find a cheap deal, but if it's too cheap, you have to wonder why. A good deal that you can move quickly, I think, are the two key words there.
I like it. Let's talk a little bit about your network. I know you and I, we connected on LinkedIn, and I see you've got a lot of LinkedIn connections. I'm curious, how important is your network, and how many people are you regularly in contact with that you rely on, that you, you know, are seeking their input or reaching out to on a regular basis?
I'd say I have about 100 to 150 people that I guess I'm in constant communication with on a every month basis. I wouldn't say every day. People that are real estate developers, investors, bankers, financiers, agents, different, parts of people that are part of my general day-to-day activities. I have over 30,000 people that follow me on LinkedIn, and that's great because new opportunities present themselves so frequently in different forms, and I screen the ones that are attractive or I refer them to someone else. I'd say that the overall network and my personal network and the kind of like social media networks, they are essential to business today.
I like it. I'm going to give you four topics. Just pick one and give me an answer if you would. Most recent book, a mentor, your biggest mistake, or a personal mantra?
I'll go personal mantra.
All right, let's hear it. What's your personal mantra?
Those who say I did my best are the ones who came second. I say just go for it. Just caution to the wind, put your boxing gloves on. There is no I did my best. There is only winning and succeeding. I've won, I've lost, but I've never given up. And I would say that if you have a desire to succeed, you will succeed.
I like it. What advice do you give to someone looking to grow their real estate portfolio?
Move cautiously. Don't jump in too much. I would say do not overextend yourself. So many people do, and that is going to be the number one reason why people fail. They take on more than they can afford, more than they can handle. They start development projects and then take the income from the income-producing properties to feed their development projects, and then they run out of money. They end up losing everything. I would say just proceed with caution. Don't overextend, and pick wisely. Always think about a long-term plan. It's good to make money by fixing and flipping, but think that 25 years from now, after you've fixed and flipped and sold everything, that you have nothing left. If you hold on to some of those properties and manage them and grow them, you're accumulating long-term net wealth, and that will put you in a good financial position for a future life.
I like that. And before we go, what's the best way for somebody to reach out and connect with you?
They can reach us via our website at westoneinternational.com. They can reach me via my personal website at adamcohentoday.com, or they can just get us through the office. Numbers are all on the website.
All right. Adam, I want to say thank you again for taking a few minutes to speak with us today, and I look forward to doing it again.
Likewise. Feel free anytime.
I just love Adam's mantra, go for it and win. If you enjoyed my interview with Adam Cohen as much as I did, I've got a special treat for you. There's a part two. When I was interviewing Adam after I was done, I thanked him for doing the interview, and we kept talking, and I kept recording. And in that, he provided a bunch of additional details about a commercial deal he did and additional insights on what it takes to be a successful investor. Enough so much that there's enough for a second interview. The challenge I face is, do I wait a week to release the second part, or do I release it sooner? And I'm thinking I'm going to go ahead and release it sooner. So if you want to hear more stories from Adam, be sure to subscribe. Go to iTunes and subscribe, and you'll know exactly when I post the second part there, because it's probably going to happen before next week. Our regular program, we've got another guest that's ready to go. So be sure to subscribe, and you can hear that on the iTunes there. Let's see. We know you're busy, and I just want to say thanks so much for making time for us. We do appreciate you. That's about all we've got today. So until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Networks, CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.
Well, I just want to thank you for taking time to listen today. We know you're busy, and we do appreciate you taking the time to out of your busy day to listen for listen with us. I hope you found something you can use in Leonard's presentation. I think it's always good to have a little brush up, a little refresher, and you know, remember the you gotta be looking out for yourself out there in the sales world, and that it's always changing. As you heard Leonard mention, he has some courses coming up here this summer, and if you decide to participate in any of his courses, be sure to mention our program, Commercial Real Estate Pro Network, and CREPN Radio, and he will provide an appropriate discount. Also, don't forget to check out his website. That's missionprofitable.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.